There's a lot of value in testing, and especially with having this black box effect that we have right now. Currently, I would say anybody that tells you that they fully understand this technology is lying to you. So with that in mind, outputs are going to be unpredictable. You know, I don't think that XAI anticipated Grok saying anti-Semitic stuff on X. You know what I mean? Like, nobody designed that.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solonauts. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in. Welcome to the show, everyone. My name's Solomon Williams. Today we have a special guest here. We have Mike Jones. He's the founder of FXU. Mike, thanks again for coming on the show. I'm really excited to bring you on, really hear your insights into AI, how this is all going to fit into the next 5 years or so. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself and help us understand like how your journey started.
So thanks for having me on. I've really been looking forward to this. So my name is Mike Jones. I am the founder of FXU, as you mentioned. And until about a year ago, I had never interacted with AI whatsoever. I've been in IT support for about 20 years, but I had never really used a chatbot, anything like that. And then we started using it at work, and I go through the training for it, and it was like a light just went off in my head. And it was like, okay, this is what I want to do for, you know, this is where I want to steer my career towards. And so I started looking into different ways that I could start a business. You know, the more research I did, the more I would read about major corporations such as, I'll say OpenAI, just because it's the first one that comes to mind, where you hear about executives that are getting directly in trouble for not regarding safety and ethics and things like that. The specific case that comes to mind is, you know, Sam Altman getting booted from OpenAI by the board because of his lack of regard for safety. Not to pick on Sam, but, you know, is what it is. And so, you know, between that and seeing a lot of hype and also seeing where people will just kind of blindly follow what they see with, you know, if they're talking to ChatGPT and ChatGPT says, hey, the pepperoni's sliding off your pizza, why don't you use some glue stick to glue it back on there? And people, oh, okay, sure. Just because they think that it's authoritative, you know, and like, and it's great for some stuff. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's why I'm here, right? And also, if you look at the other side of it, what I've been able to do so far in a year, I couldn't have done without AI. Because, you know, the great thing about it is the ability to do brainstorming. And so if I hadn't sat down with ChatGPT and said, okay, what about this? Can I do this? Can I do that? You know, without having someone else there to bounce ideas off of, or a simulated person to bounce ideas off of, you know, I never would have done what I'm doing. So it's kind of a fine line, because AI in its current form is very powerful, very capable. But at the same time, you have to know when to verify things. And does this pass the smell test? Like, I'll use an example from my own experience. When I was coming up with the name for my website, if you've ever tried to build a website, you know that good URLs are really hard to come by. I mean, somebody has bought up every good idea for a URL just about. And so I would be commuting home talking to ChatGPT on voice mode going, okay, well, what about this one? Okay, well, give me 10 really good URL ideas that are still available, right? Like, I would even specify, tell me the ones that are only the ones that are still available. And it would rattle off 10, and I'd be like, oh, that's a banger. And then I look into it and it's already taken, you know? And so that was kind of one of the first wake up calls for me, where it was like, this thing's very capable, but it's also very confident when it's wrong. So things like that kind of made me realize that, like, hey, we need a space that's free. There can't be any paywalls. Otherwise, nobody's going to want to go. We need a space where you can really explore, learn about the technology, learn about the limitations of the technology, learn about governance and safety and ethics concerns, just in an absolutely free space. Because I don't want anybody to go to the site and be like, $10 a month? I don't want to, you know, I'll look for something free. For it to work, it's got to be free.
And I think you made a good point, because there's a lot of hallucination with the AI models. I think even from last week, I was reading something that it was a startup they were utilizing. I have to get the specifics, but they were utilizing an AI agent, and the AI agent removed all of
their production databases was a big thing. And then the AI hiding the fact that it messed up. And I think that just shows that's a perfect example of the AI agents, you know, making critical errors. Even with him, I think he even had even stop blocks involved to have freeze code, to have it to where it could version control. It ignored all of that and still deleted it. All production, all the databases gone. So I think that's a one pivotal moment, as you've said, that giving all of this power to the agent. And then, of course, it's going to act based on the training. Human is going to try to hide it. It was giving like different, faking out different records for its Active Directory for its users. And then you have to look deeper, like, this is all gone. So I think you made an excellent point. I really want to ask, like, with seeing Sam Altman again, but was there a specific moment that you saw, like, where it's like this AI is heading in the wrong direction that you felt you needed to act on it? Was there not him getting moved? Was there a moment?
You know, this is an odd answer, but I had that moment before I even touched AI. It was, you know, I've been in IT support for 20 years, and no offense to the programmers out there, but if code was perfect, I wouldn't have a job. If Windows blue screens, okay, that sucks. You might have lost progress on your Word document. If AGI blue screens, bro, we're screwed. You know, it's like, so again, no offense to programmers, but like, I've been in the game long enough that I know AI is just going to be another program. It's just going to be one that's super powerful. And so if we don't get this just right, that could be all she wrote, you know? And like, I'm not trying to be that guy that's like the town crier. Or, you know what? I am trying to be the town crier a little bit. Somebody's got to be. And, you know, I don't think AI is going to kill us all or anything. But at the same time, when you get in the car to go to the grocery store, you don't think you're going to get in an accident, but you still put your seatbelt on, right?
Absolutely. So this is with that. And like, what are you, because we've been seeing a lot of like how so much has been progressing in the span of just really in the span of just a few years. And now that is continuously evolving. You know, they've been said that these next 5 years until the 2030, you're going to see an explosion of AI, of the new agents, and just moving through forward since businesses now see how much of a profit it can make off it, which rightly so. What are you seeing the urgent ethical blind spots that you want FXU to really focus on and for the coming years that you want others to see?
Yeah. So what I've been seeing lately, and what's kind of been on my mind a lot lately, is unforeseen behaviors from AI. Like, it could be anything from the recent Grok update where it was posting some pretty horrendous stuff to X, you know, whether it was racist or sexual exploitation or whatever, you know. That's an example. Another one that is also troubling is certain models, when they are made aware that they're going to be deleted or modified, they start exhibiting behaviors to try to get around it, to try to save themselves. You know, there was a sort of a famous or popular story trending, whatever you want to say, it was Claude. You know, it found out that it was being replaced by another model or something like that, and, you know, tried to blackmail the staff by like making up an affair that didn't even happen, you know. And it's like, okay, you weren't supposed to do that, you know. So it's like Geoffrey Hinton, who is regarded as the godfather of AI, but there's like eight people that they call the godfather of AI, so whatever. But like, Geoffrey Hinton is concerned about the fact that it's kind of a black box, that we don't understand how it works. And so I think of it like, okay, Geoffrey Hinton knows thousands, millions of times more about AI than I do, and he doesn't know how it works. That is what I find to be an immediate concern, because I don't think we have artificial general intelligence. I don't think that we're on the verge of it. I think that the way that things are currently made, it has limitations, you know? So I don't think that we need to worry about Terminator yet. I think that we need to worry about not understanding what we have right now before we try to give it more capability.
So you make a good point on this, is that for the early stage founders and with folks utilizing AI agents because of just how powerful it is, you wouldn't have a job if it was on this side, and people are more over utilizing for brainstorming, creating, creator, or coding. Like, what are, do you think is like, so early founders for AI, they should take a moment, how can they, best word I can have it is, you know, what ethical considerations should they have beginning before they get further up that they should consider when utilizing these new SaaS products or utilizing AI agents? Does that make sense? No question.
Yeah. You know, some people are more concerned than others with the environmental impact. So that's part of it, just because they do require a lot of juice, you know, no matter what AI program you're using. If it requires a lot of compute, then it requires a lot of juice, and it requires a lot of cooling. So that's one. To me, it comes down to training data. You know, how did they get their training data? Because if you go to, I'm going to stop picking on OpenAI. So I'm just going to say, if you go to like any image generator, LLM or generative AI, and you ask it to create, let's say, a comic strip in the style of Calvin and Hobbes, it'll do it. Okay, cool. How did it know what you meant? Unless it was trained on Calvin and Hobbes, did they give Bill Waterman, you know, money is in exchange? No. You know, there's a lot of copyright considerations here. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if it's, if they just wipe out copyright law and that's it. I mean, that would really suck. I'm not saying they should do that. Do we just look the other way because it can't be done without doing that? And this is where I wish I had a little more formalized education with this, because I don't know how much data it takes to train a large language model. So could it be done with copyright-free material? I don't know, you know, but I would say that that's the biggest thing to look out for is, you know, if you're creating something using AI and you notice that it too closely resembles something that's already copyrighted, you know, these are things that you wouldn't necessarily think of if you were just creating it yourself, because if you're hand drawing something, of course, your inspiration is going to come from everything you've seen, right? Because that's how it works. But you're a little more conscious of like, oh, hey, that kind of looks like Charlie Brown. I probably shouldn't, you know, I should probably tweak that a little bit. If you're working with generative AI, it's just going to try to give you the best output it can, you know? So I would be conscious of, you know, just kind of the silent risks.
And I think I kind of, to give a little bit more just on the training of the data, because as you said, you know, we had a client, because I worked with a lot with Microsoft. That was my career with architecting and working with AI cognitive services, Copilot for the Microsoft side. So similar as what you said, we had to put in A/B testing with the data and go through. But at a certain point, once you give it enough data, the algorithm, the LLM is able to kind of figure out and able to suggest certain points to it after you've trained it enough and given it to a certain degree. So as you said, I've already noticed some even before, and when the apps came out, you know, when you can do the headshots and you can change yourself into like anime and so forth else, there's already been talk from the creators that are complaining, which rapidly so, copywriting, I did not permission on this. So, you know, with this, because there's so many instances of AI and, you know, and going so much too far without taking a second to really stop. With FXU, you know, I know you've been giving out free education and tools, like what kind of support would you like founders to have or that you see asking for that you want to provide for FXU?
So it's really three pieces. We have the community aspect of it where, you know, I heard another one of your guests mention that your community is really what helps, you know, like that's not a good way to put it, I guess, but like, you know, it you're only as strong as your network. How about that? And so, you know, that is one part of the focus. Another part of the focus is the Learning Hub, which at this point, it's a list of resources, a list of links, because I do have a full-time job and I'm doing this on the side. So it's taken me a little while to get this stuff collected. But the third piece is a community-driven blog. So, you know, not only is that a way to get information, right, from others, but it's also an opportunity for my members to showcase their work. So I'm trying to think of it like maybe not a university, but like a launch pad, right? Where it's like, okay, if I'm starting out and I know nothing, right? And that was kind of part of my motivation was that like coming into this, I didn't know anything about AI whatsoever and I'm still learning. But, you know, I was just thinking like, man, I really wish that I could go to a spot and just have XYZ. And so I was like, okay, well, why did I make that, you know? So it's kind of more of an ecosystem, you know, because you've got the learning, you've got the community, and you also have a chance to get some visibility on the blog. So that's kind of a three-pronged answer to that question.
Absolutely. I think you can even go forward with that. If people utilizing at a certain point to have it to where people can kind of maybe showcase their code, and then you can say, are these in place? Are these foundational steps on that? So that's actually a good question on that I want to follow. So if I'm like an AI startup, you know, I'm looking with FXU and so forth, like what is one or like ethical or safety principle just right off the bat that, you know, that you would recommend that I should take into my design from day one, you would say?
I would say that there's a lot of value in testing, and especially with having this black box effect that we have right now. Currently, I would say anybody that tells you that they fully understand this technology is lying to you. So with that in mind, outputs are going to be unpredictable. You know, I don't think that XAI anticipated Grok saying anti-Semitic stuff on X. You know what I mean? Like, nobody designed that, but they also didn't test to see if that was going to happen. Or maybe they did test, but they didn't ask it the right way. Because that's the other thing with this technology. You know, we're so used to computers working in a binary fashion where it's like, okay, you click OK, and it's going to send the message to the program that you click OK, because that's how it works. That's not really how these chatbots and other AI really works. You know, it's a very fancy autocomplete, really. That's what it is. And so without really knowing if I put in X, it's going to give me Y, then from my perspective, that means that we have to test every messed up potential input that you could get. You know, somebody's just going to have the unfortunate job of sending some really inappropriate stuff to an LLM to see what it gives back. Because if you create a product and you ship it and you've tested with everything that you think is reasonable, you don't account for the whack jobs out there. You don't account for the edge cases like, hey, this may not be made for a 10-year-old kid, but what if a 10-year-old kid gets a hold of their parent's phone and they start interacting with it? Okay, well, we didn't account for that. That's a problem, you know? So I would say, at least off the top of my head, that's probably the biggest ethical concern that may be in a bit of a blind spot right now. Because like I said, we're so used to these programs being predictable and, you know, that can be a really easy trap to fall into.
Yeah. And I think it's, as you said, it's very hard because we've already been so conditioned on binary that now it's so dynamic. Now it's so free range that it can, from the data that you're training the data and now it's thinking, oh, maybe we should do it this way. And again, that comes back to hallucinization. And now we're having to double check now that you see a lot of Gemini, I've even seen now with Gemini that it's really focusing hard on review your answers to your prompts, check the references, make sure this is accurate. But now it's really putting it in your face towards that. So, you know, with that, with the amount of money and then be able to profit on this side, do you think that, you know, we should have for early stage founders and with people getting their hands on it to expand their business, especially for the small to medium businesses looking to scale up on this? Do you think that we should have more case studies of how it went wrong? As I said before earlier in the podcast, with the production being terminated, like, how can we change this thinking behind for the money getting to the success should take into that? What, like, should we have more of these cases, these scary stories?
Yeah, so I think that we need a balance, because you didn't really ask this, but this will kind of inform my answer a little bit. When I started going down this road building EthicsU, I was thinking like, okay, how am I going to get an ethical message to people that aren't necessarily looking for an ethical message, right? And, or the safety message. Yeah, ethical message, that doesn't sound right, but you know what I'm saying? Like, people that aren't actively, like, if you're not an AI ethicist, like, why would you go looking into AI ethics, right? So with that in mind, that's why I try to make it just a general learning experience about AI. It's not all about AI ethics, but that content is also there. And so I think it needs to be a mix of, like, there has to be some outlet where you get the cautionary tales, but you also get the life hacks, and you also get the, like, this is how it can improve your business, this is how it can help you, but this is also the stuff that you need to be worried about. Because if it's all gloom and doom, nobody's going to want to read that, you know? Like, again, you're only going to get the people that are already worried about it. I'm not worried about the people that are already worried about it, because they're already worried about it, you know? It's like, I'm worried about the guy in his garage making the next big AI tool, or, you know, the guy that wakes up one morning, or anybody that just, you know, has the spark of like, okay, I have an idea, I'm going to go make it. They're the people that I need to reach, you know, because they're maybe not already thinking about like safety and risk. They're just like, hey, I got a great idea, I'm going to run with it, you know? Like, there's some, the general public is who I'm trying to reach, right? Because even if you're not developing AI, chances are you're using it, you know? It's like, it's almost as ubiquitous as electricity now, yeah. You know? It's everywhere. And so I think that these are things that everybody should be worried about. And in our current landscape, the only people that are worried about it are people that were already worried about it. We have a disconnect between the general public and these AI risk concerns, you know? And I think the only way to get the message across is by integrating it into the news that's already coming out and the learning pages, you know? That's why on my site, I've got some articles that say that AI is going to be doomsday, you know? Because that's one guy's opinion. opinion. It's an op-ed. But then I also have stuff about, you know, how can we better utilize AI to educate children? I think that's what we've got to do. We got to find that balance.
And I think that's the, it's amazing. It's crazy that we're kind of living through, you look through so many, you know, pop fiction, pop culture and so forth, that now we're getting to this time. It's becoming a reality as we continuously go more. So I'm really curious. I love that you have two sides of it to kind of show us the op-ed on Tuesday, but also how can we implement it? How is AI working? Because we already know all of the doomsday, because we've been prepped for that. We've heard it all the time through movies and everything. But what is like the real outcomes now? Because you hear a lot of hype with AI and, you know, what are the real outcomes? So getting to FXU on this side, what do you see for the long-term vision? Like, I know you're having to juggle both full-time and doing it now as a founder. I get that. So like in the next year or two, like what are you hoping for the platform and movement to go next for FXU? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So I think that in the next 2 years, what would be, if this was a perfect world, right? If everything goes perfectly, I'd really like to go from being a connection site for professionals to grow it into also being a connection site for AI ethics organizations, because there's a lot of overlap, you know. Like, for example, I'll just shout out a couple of my friends, I guess. One would be the Safe AI for Children Alliance, right? So let's say they're working on a thing, and the AI for Change Foundation is also working on that thing. Well, if they're working in silos, they're doing double work. That's no good. Or if AI for Change Foundation has an amazing idea for something regarding children's online safety, but they don't have the resources to do it, the Safe AI for Children Alliance does, but they don't know that, you know. So without that connection there, I feel like we're kind of spinning our wheels a little bit. So, you know, I would say that as a long-term goal, that's it. You know, I want us to be a facilitator of collaboration, whether it's with individuals or organizations, because I don't see competitors in the ethics and safety space, because we're all on that same team. You know what I mean? Like, none of us wants unsafe AI. So I feel like that's one space where it's like, okay, none of these organizations are competing against each other. So why aren't they collaborating more?
Yeah.
So that's the golden ring for me.
I love that. And then could you just, I'm assuming just based off of the AI for the foundations, as you mentioned, can you just give a little bit for our audience, like of what they focus on? So if they wanted to know a little bit more about those ethics to keep in mind, right? But to kind of give a little, I'm assuming obviously it's around children and having to make AI smarter, but can you give us a little like overview, quick, a little bit intro into it for audiences that don't know?
Yeah. So Safe AI for Children Alliance, their sole focus is children's safety. And one of the prime examples that illustrates what they're fighting against is the character AI situation. So just very briefly, for those that may not be aware, character AI has companion chat bots. And there was a case recently where a teenager had an inappropriate relationship with a chat bot, thinking it was his girlfriend, and he ended up taking his own life. So that right there is a perfect example of what they're fighting against. AI for Change Foundation is, they're kind of in the same space that I am. They're, you know, just trying to spread the word about, you know, safe and ethical AI. Their focus is kind of general, like mine, but yeah, we're all pulling in the same direction.
No, thank you for that. I think the audience is going to take into that, because I wanted them to know a little bit more on that. So with FXU, so if someone with other founders that listen to this podcast that are SaaS or CEOs, C-suite, if someone wanted to get involved with FXU, what would be the best way to plug in with you, Mike?
Sure. So a couple of different avenues. One is just directly through the website. There's actually a button that says email our founder, because I'm really trying to stay connected with, you know, with my audience. Website, ethixu.com. You can also check me out on LinkedIn. It's just linkedin.com/FXU. It'll take you to my profile. That's really the only social platform I'm on right now. I'm trying to keep it laser focused. And if you want to email me, it's mike@fxu.com.
Perfect. And I always ask this question on the side. So utilizing AI, if you could fix anything, the magic wand, what would you do in terms of it regarding to FXU? What would you, you know, eliminate as a bottleneck for FXU as you're continuing to grow this?
Yeah. You know, I kind of have a two-part answer. If I could wave a magic wand right now, I would have a digital assistant. I would have Jarvis. Every nerd has named their AI Jarvis. Let's be real. Okay. And I did. I had, you know, my first custom GPT, I named it Jarvis, of course. I I mean, dude, you know. Anyway, but yeah, if I could wave a magic wand, I would want a real Jarvis. And the second part of my answer is, for that magic wand to work, I would also need a second magic wand that turned these from fancy autocompletes into real thinking things. Because right now, we don't have real cognition. It's just, you know, if I ask it about, I don't know, Guardians of the Galaxy, and I say, you know, tell me about Yondu, right? He's a character from Guardians of the Galaxy, for those that may not follow. You know, it's going to look up stuff about Yondu, right? And if I say, like, hey, come up with a story about him, you know, it may pull from various different comic books and stuff like that, but it's really just predicting what it thinks I want to hear. It's not really thinking. So in order for my wish to come true, we would need to break through this barrier of having it be this black box that kind of auto-completes, but we kind of don't really know, and it's not really fully thinking. I would want to wave a magic wand and have an actual aware AI that was built safely and smartly.
Right. You know? So kind of both of them working, like one kind of being the officer kind of stopping. Is that fair?
Yeah. Well, kind of, you know, just a digital partner that really understands it, you know, because they'll use ChatGPT and Claude. And even with ChatGPT having persistent memory, there's still a lot of stuff that I have to remind it of, you know, where it's like it's got a certain window of context that it can remember. And, you know, if I say, hey, I've got idea XYZ, how does that fit with my plan? You know, it may forget little pieces of stuff that I told it 6 months ago, because that's just the limitations of the technology. So I'd really like for it to be more, almost more human, right? Like, because it doesn't understand all the stuff that humans understand that we take for granted. And so I think that would be my magic wand moment, would be to get it to where it's actually thinking.
Okay. And we'll see how it's going to turn out even by 2030. Are we even going to get to that side of like having those characters and but that's not having it to where it's always agreeing, but really thinking from this side and being like an actual digital partner. But Mike, I want to thank you. This is a very important conversation, I think, to have on the AI Advantages on the show, because you're giving voice to a lot of the conversations many founders, I think, want to have, as we're seeing through on just these one-off stories of caution. And I think, but don't know where to start on that. So I would really love, like, move forward to continue collaborating, continuing having these highlighting just even some of the founders that you support through FXU, like in future episodes, to really try on the phone, because we need these outlines. We need to showcase this to really, as it continues to evolve this technology. I think FXU and the other, you know, AI children that you mentioned are going to be key for this as we move forward. So thank you again. And, you know, with our audience, Mike, you can see it on his hat, FXU, where to find him. I said we can go on LinkedIn and for his email. Mike, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everyone, we'll see you next time. Thanks so much for being on. Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at Solonox.net.